February the 20th, and with that gavel, I call to order the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. We are here for several purposes today. First of all, carried over from Monday the 19th, a work session on a federal grant for the Oregon Department of Transportation. Carried over from Monday, a work session on Senate Bill 5510, the Employment Department. And for the purpose of public hearing and public testimony on Senate Bill 5538, the Racing Commission. And hopefully we've got a little more clarity and we're ready to go. So with that, I will invite Mr. Tindall up to perhaps give us a little bit clearer explanation on why it is the Department of Transportation is seeking a $150,000 grant.
Thank you, Chair Johnson, members of the committee. Good afternoon again. Doug Tindall, Deputy Director, Oregon Department of Transportation. Left with a couple questions to bring back for you today. One of them was around the cost of that was in the cited in the request. I want to make clear that this request does not have any, well, it has something to do with that cost, and this request is a for a planning grant to try and lower that cost by finding a less expensive alignment for this trail. So that's, just to be clear, that's what this is about. The cost is high right now because this runs literally right next to the UP main line and requires a bunch of retaining walls and a long structure, and that's why that cost is what it is. But again, the request is for a planning grant to try and lower that cost. There was also a request about the anticipated foot and bike traffic. What we've, in this particular section in 2003, the last time we measured the volume, there were 20,000 walkers and riders that year that visited this particular area. However, in areas where we can hook the trail, as this one would be, where we can hook the trail back to where you can get at it from roadways, such as the Hood River to Mosier section of the historic Columbia River Highway Trail, there were over 125,000 users in the same year in 2003. So I hope I've been able to answer the questions for you, and I'd be glad to entertain any others.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Tindall? Just to repeat, the purpose of this grant at no cost to ODOT is to figure out how to accomplish the goals at hand at a lesser cost than $9 million.
That's correct.
The chair would entertain a motion.
What was the motion, Madam Chair?
The motion is to approve the request of the Oregon Department of Transportation to apply for a $150,000 Federal Transit Administration grant.
So moved.
To recommend approval to the full committee.
Right, to recommend approval to the full Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
So moved.
Okay. Any questions? Any objections? I can leave a happy man, Mr. Tindall.
Can I carry
the sign-up carrier? Sure. It's got to be somebody who's on full. How about Mr. Edwards? Would you like to carry
it? I'd be happy to do that, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Our second piece of business is the Employment Department, Senate Bill 5510. And Ms. Dyser is going to join us. And a couple of prefatory comments before we start. The first one is that yesterday was a teachable moment, and I think all of you by this time should have your OLCC budget in your offices delivered with ample time to fully examine it so that we'll all come in prepared. You will not ever see a LFO recommendation on your table that you haven't had in your office with adequate time to review it. The second thing is, well, I guess that was the main one. Ms. Dyster, do you have any additional comments?
Not unless there are additional questions.
Ms. Warner, you want to come forward just so that we've got you here? I think that it was important that everybody have a chance. Oh, I know what it was. The other thing that was a question, and I took the responsibility of going and visiting with Senator Schrader. And based on that conversation with respect to the child care issues and the failure of the JLAC to accept the report, it was just as Ms. Warner identified it, and I specifically asked the co-chair if I had his permission to represent his remarks here in this committee. He gave me that permission. His was not an issue with the deficiency in the report. His was the fact that the report failed to touch on the broader question of, is there a more efficient, smarter, better way to do this? It in no way implied criticism of the Employment Department's execution of their portion of that child care, which is licensing. but it instead asked a broader question. Senator Schrader and the three affected agencies are meeting starting tomorrow to see if they can come back with a recommendation for a better way to do it. It was the co-chair's hope that this issue and his explanation carried through me would adequately resolve your questions. He didn't want to see this budget delayed based on any perception of activities that he was engaged in, and so that's the report from Senator Schrader. I spoke with him in his office last night. Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How about a conversation around the other subjects discussed in terms of the larger picture and passing through?
I did touch on that with Senator Schrader, and the co-chair's budget is being worked on as we speak. They are anticipating, and I would beg correction from LFO if I'm way off the mark, but they're anticipating having it out late February, early March. The observation with respect to this budget is that this has a modest amount of general fund, and any budgets that are on an expedited track right now have very small amounts of general fund. So that while we don't know the size of the universe right now, and that will be clearer with the publication of the co-chair's budget, these budgets are not huge general fund budgets. And whether or not one likes the answer, that's the status right now, and I think it is the interest of the co-chairs to continue to work budgets with these modest amounts of general fund in them. Any other questions or comments? So at this point, the chair would entertain a motion to accept the LFO recommendation with respect to Senate Bill 5510 to move Senate Bill 5510 to the full Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
So moved.
Representative Tomei has moved Senate Bill 5510 to full with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any? Representative Gilman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to have to vote no on this budget. And as a matter of fact, I'll have to vote no on any budget that has general fund money in it until we see the full co-chair's budget. And that's where I am.
Thank you. Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I also will be a no on this. And I feel badly for the agency because I don't fault the agency for this opportunity for them to come before this committee, and I don't fault them for their budget process, but I do find it irresponsible on the part of this committee and all of our Ways and Means committees to move forward without that full picture in place. And I respectfully submit that comment. I know you went to the co-chairs and visited with them about that, but if we expedite through these issues without knowing where we're going to end up, I think we're moving forward irresponsibly. And
thank you for your comment. Representative Whitsitt.
Senator Whitsitt.
I'm sorry, Senator Whitsitt. I'm sorry.
No problem. I will be a no also for the same articulated reasons.
Thank you. Any other comments? All right, then let the record, any other objections? Then let the record indicate that Representative Gilman, Representative Hannah, and Senator Whitsitt are no's. Okay, and with that, it moves forward. We need a carrier. Any volunteers who sit on full?
I'll be happy to carry it.
Thank you. Senator Verger? All right. Thank you, Ms. Warner, Mr. McGee. That brings us to our next piece of business, a public hearing and public testimony on Senate Bill 5538, the Racing Commission. Oh, okay. Sorry, we need a carrier for the floor in the Senate. And Senator Verger, if you've done it at full, would you mind carrying it on the floor? The Employment Department?
I would not mind at all.
And we need a carrier on the House side. Any volunteers? Senator, Representative Shields volunteers.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right.
Okay. We have a changing of the LFO. Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Paul Siebert, Legislative Fiscal Office. You have before you the Racing Commission. This is their first hearing. They're also an expedited budget for this committee. I would note that there's no general fund in this budget. In fact, this budget generates general fund. through a tax on the receipts of the paramutual hubs, which I'm sure you'll hear about. And with that, Madam Chair, I would introduce Gordon Tolman. He is the interim executive director of the commission.
Welcome, Mr. Tolman, and would you introduce yourself for the record?
For the record?
For the record, my name is Gordon Tolman, interim executive director of the Oregon Racing Commission.
Welcome, Mr. Tolman, and would you introduce your colleagues?
This is Chair.
My name is Jeff Gilmore. I'm currently the chair of the Oregon Racing Commission. And if you don't mind, I wanted to make an opening statement.
And just for the benefit of some of the new members here, a former member of this distinguished legislative body and a former Ways and Means co-chair. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I wanted to thank you so much when we had the overview because this is sort of an unusual commission. The members are lay people. It's a regulatory commission, and it makes it somewhat difficult for members of the commission having to serve on just a, quote, regulatory-type
commission. What we, in essence, do beyond our statute is we're also promoters of this industry, while it's not in the statute that we're in promotion, it's an industry that covers this whole state. We do not have paramutual racing, per se, live racing throughout the state, as we had many years ago. But there are still several areas in the state, and we are regulators of that paramutual racing, which is a form of gambling, as you know, that is different than the lottery commission. And over the last few months, we've had some we've lost the director, and it was my job to find somebody that was qualified to take it at a time like this, and I believe that Gordon is very qualified. He is very knowledgeable about the industry, and that we appreciate the fact that we can be in front of you on an expedited agenda. I think working with LFO, it's a pretty reasonable budget being put together to continue that regulatory, somewhat still promoting the industry, and we're trying the best we can at the commission level to see that where there are races, the summer meets throughout the state, that we can satisfy those county needs that participate in that paramutual racing. So thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Any questions for either Mr. Tolman or Mr. Gilmore? While we're taking this break to see if there are any questions, there is a sign-up sheet for the audience and anybody listening to this broadcast. There's a sign-up sheet. We're going to be taking public testimony if anyone signs up to do so. Sign-up sheet in the back of the room, and I would invite people to sign up if they're interested in testifying. No questions? Mr. Tolman?
Well, thank you again, Senator Johnson, Chair Johnson, and the committee for giving me an opportunity to speak with you about horse racing and the Oregon Racing Commission's role in horse racing. As my wife would tell you, I love talking about horse racing, so if any of you have any questions at any point, feel free to jump in and ask those questions, because indeed I'm here to help clarify, and I understand that not everybody has a background in horse racing or knowledge of horse racing. Our budget may be small compared to many other agencies, but indirectly it has a far greater impact on the state of Oregon than what you'll see in our budget alone. Horse racing is more than a sport, and it's more than a gaming venture. It's an industry that reaches virtually all areas of our state. The Oregon Racing Commission is charged with the regulation of racing itself, but those we regulate own farms, or they support farmers who grow grain and hay. They're clients of regional feed stores, blacksmiths, veterinarians, and tax shops. And at the ORC, we always try to keep in mind that we are part of a much larger picture in addition to our regulatory role. Now, this isn't intended to downplay the importance of the regulatory role, Gambling revenue is the economic engine that makes the industry possible, and we realize this. We exist to ensure the integrity of the sport. We serve to protect the wagering public and offer them the assurance that the races they wager on are conducted fairly and under known and published rules of the state of Oregon. It is also our role to ensure that participants in the sport themselves know that they are playing on a fair and level playing field. To that end, the Oregon Racing Commission employs state veterinarians to ensure that horses are sound and capable of racing. We employ stewards to enforce the rules. They diligently watch every race every day. They have the authority to disqualify horses for interference, issue fines and suspensions if any ORC licensee violates the rules. We also employ investigators. In no small part, their job is to keep undesirables from participating in the sport. We have auditors who review wagering figures and make sure that everyone, the state included, of course, gets their fair share of the wagering dollars. We have employees in the test barn, and they may not have the most glamorous job. They collect urine samples. But having said that, it's a vital role because those tests, you know, we test for illegal substances or overages of allowed substances, again, to keep the playing field level. We have a small but dedicated office staff as well. They're very knowledgeable about their duties, and the commissioners themselves, of course, are appointed by the governor. What's the state of racing in Oregon today? Well, we've lost Multnomah Greyhound Park. We've lost the state fair races at Salem. We have one commercial race meet currently, and that would be Portland Meadows. They've long battled declines in attendance and on-track handle, but that's not something that's unique to Oregon. It's a nationwide dilemma, really, for racetrack operators. For years, racing was the only game in town for wagering. Now opportunities to gamble exist virtually on every corner, and that has certainly had an impact on horse racing, not only in our state, but all over the country. While we can't go back to making racing the only game in town, Portland Meadows did recently tell the commission at our February meeting that they are making a seven-figure investment into improving their facilities. Of course, where you put on the show, it does matter how it looks, and it does help attendance. So we were very excited to hear that they are making that investment. They're owned by a larger company called Magna Entertainment. Some of the items that are going to be installed at Portland Meadows now were purchased as part of something they were going to do at Gulfstream Park in Florida, where they have a casino. So it's casino quality equipment, and will give the track a much brighter, more pleasant atmosphere. It's really fancy stuff that they're putting in, so we're excited about that. In addition to Portland Meadows, the Oregon Racing Commission regulates race meets conducted in Union, Grants Pass, Prineville, Tillamook, and Burns. These meets are relatively short, but they are very important to the communities where they take place. Horse people and racing fans converge on these sites, and they bring important economic boosts to those areas. And Senator Johnson, I believe, Chair Johnson, that you could attest to that in Tillamook.
Absolutely.
Account wagering is one area that the state of Oregon has been very progressive in. With regard to laws and rules that give the racing industry a chance to survive in this challenging marketplace, the legislature has approved interstate simulcasting, off-track betting, and, of course, account wagering. Account wagering, which is through multi-jurisdictional simulcasting and interactive wagering totalizator hubs, that's a mouthful. I'll just refer to it as account wagering from this point forward, have become a key player in helping to support racing in Oregon. We are at the forefront of account wagering. We were the first state to actively pass rules and regulations allowing account wagering. We have more account wagering companies licensed through us than any other state. There are only a handful of states that have followed our actions and passed laws to allow account wagering. Virtually all of them have either read the Oregon laws and based their laws on Oregon or actually outright called us and said, how do we do this? So we are at the forefront. And just to give you an example of just how prominent we are, and I got the permission of this group to mention this, but Kentucky happens to be one of the states that's passed account wagering laws. Churchill Downs Incorporated, which owns Churchill Downs, where the Kentucky Derby is run, actually has talked with Oregon about licensing a potential account wagering company here rather than in Kentucky. And let me assure you, that's a major step for the track that runs the Kentucky Derby to look at coming to Oregon rather than going to Kentucky. So again, I can't emphasize enough how major of a player Oregon is in account wagering. We currently have 7 account wagering companies licensed in Oregon. Their customers wagered approximately $1 billion last year. And in payments to the commission, divided two-thirds to the racing fund and one-third to the general fund, it was about $2 million in 2006. Are there any general questions that any of you have at this point? I'd be happy to.
Thank you, colleagues. Representative Shields.
Senator Johnson, thank you, Madam Chair. How long has the state's share of Hub's gross receipts been at 0.25%?
I believe the initial rule when it was passed and when the first account wagering company was licensed, which was 2000, if memory serves correctly, it was 0.25%. Now we have adopted other tax options in order to be progressive and competitive because, as I mentioned, everybody looked at our rules and realized they needed to price themselves about where Oregon was. So what we have done is we've given them options. They choose 0.25%. They can choose one state where that state's rate applies rather than Oregon's, if they happen to be in a state that is more competitive. California comes to mind. They don't actually charge a tax on the account wagering handle. So our account wagering companies that also are licensed in California will choose the option of paying 0.25% on all handle except for California handle, which they pay zero because that's what California's rate is. If they're not licensed in California, most of the other hubs choose the 0.125% up to $60 million. And at that point, they pay 0.25% until they've reached a cap that's spelled out in the rules and regulations. The cap is, I believe, this year at $325,000. It's going up, I believe, for the next 2 years, so it will be through this biennium. And at that point, we can revisit whether it's a good idea to keep the caps, raise the caps, or eliminate them altogether.
That's good. Follow-up. So if I'm reading this correctly and based on the previous presentation, about $1 million of general fund comes from that 0.25%. Is that correct?
That sounds about right. If the amount actually last year was $2 million in tax, a third of that would have gone to the general fund.
And then the other, then the rest go to the summer races.
Goes to the summer race meets and other programs that can apply for funds. For example, some of the summer race meets have built new barns and other adjustments to their facilities. Some money has been granted to the Oregon Horsemen's Benevolent Protective Association, also to the Oregon Thoroughbred Breeders Association, and the Oregon Quarter Horse Racing Association to fund some of their programs and increased purses at Portland Meadows as well.
Can I ask one last one?
One last follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I know this might not exactly be your role to play, but if one way that we might try to get more revenue into the state might be tinkering with that. Could you talk about what the ramifications are, perhaps unforeseen consequences, if we somehow were able to increase that to 0.3%?
Well, Chair Johnson, Representative Shields, I would say that at this point, it's a drop in the bucket in terms of what it does for the general fund. What it does for the racing industry, though, is so vital. All of the purse money at those summer fair meets come from this fund, and anything that reduces the fund would reduce our ability to continue to fund the live races and to make improvements that are much needed to those facilities.
I can see one last follow-up.
So, thank you, Madam Chair. So my understanding is that, let's say if you take a dollar from that 0.25, that a third of that dollar goes to the general fund and two-thirds goes to the summer races. Is that, am I correct, or am I mistaken?
Two-thirds goes to the summer, to the fund, the hub fund, which is dispersed in the industry. So it isn't 100% dedicated strictly to the summer races, but the bulk of it does go to fund those.
Some to the industry. All right. Thank you very much.
Senator George.
Madam Chair, I love the part, and I think we may have mentioned this before, about promoting thoroughbred breeding. Mm-hmm. The industry is what is so important to me as far as Oregon goes. And I may have mentioned this to you before, and that was former Senator Tom Harton, had a vision that we would become the Kentucky of the West Coast. And part of that vision, and which I believe, I've seen enough in my area to realize that that could really, in fact, come to pass. But the other thing to me is that the state fair should be an important part of that. What do you believe are the chances of us, that, do you believe there's a future for the industry to literally become the Kentucky of the West Coast? When I think about South Korea and their desire to purchase our quality livestock, and along with that, the state promoting it by racing at the state fair, how would you estimate the industry?
Well, Chair Johnson and Senator George, I would love for Oregon to be the Kentucky of the West. Having worked in the industry for a number of years, though, and again going back to the paramutual handle is really the economic engine of the whole thing. The reality is that our handle generated at our racetracks is not sufficient to create a purse level that would make us approach Kentucky. And that's just an unfortunate economic reality. Now, with the expansion of wagering hubs, if we get more hubs, if we generate more revenue, then maybe we can do some more things to help purses in general and make this a much stronger way of life for those involved in the industry. We are a long way, though, from getting to the Kentucky level. In fact, now Kentucky is a bit crying poor in the fact that they have competition from states that have other forms of gambling allowed at their racetracks. Basically, there's become what's referred to as racinos now, where the racetracks have casino games. And those casino games then do prop up the purses at those racetracks. So you can have venues that traditionally were at a Portland Meadows level that now may surpass Kentucky in terms of daily purses because of the dollars generated from slot revenue. I don't foresee Oregon looking at slots at the racetracks in the near future, though I'm sure our racetracks would welcome the opportunity if the state wanted to look at that.
The other part?
Follow-up, Senator George.
Was the idea of participating with parks at the state fair mm-hmm. to look at this issue again. Because, I think the state fair has always been a spark plug, a generator for industry in the state. New ideas are brought forward. We remember our traditions. This was a major tradition. And the idea of using that as a model to revive, has there been any discussion that way? Have you guys actually talked to parks about doing that with the state fair?
Well, Chair Johnson and Senator George, I grew up going to the races at Salem. That's where I got my first Oregon Racing Commission license, was in Salem. And I loved the fair, and I loved racing being a part of the fair. We would welcome the opportunity to do that again. I don't know what the realities are because, quite frankly, I haven't seen what they've done at the fairgrounds where the racetrack was, but I believe a share of that property is no longer available. And Salem, as it was, had a smaller racetrack. I believe it was 0.625 miles. You need probably at least 75 or 80 acres of land to put in a track even of that size. And I think that would make it very difficult to bring that back onto the state fairgrounds, although racing in conjunction with the state fair, if anyone ever came up with a proposal to do so and possibly bring racing back to the Salem area, we'd welcome anybody who wants to invest in bringing more live racing to the state, because we can do simulcasting and we can do account wagering, and those things are very important, don't misunderstand me. But there's nothing like going to a live racetrack and watching the animals compete right there in front of you. So anything that can bring more of that, we would welcome. I don't know, to answer your question in all honesty, that it's much of a reality at this point.
Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Did we at one time entertain an idea to do at the Portland Meadows facility lottery games, line games, lottery games, and where did we do that, or where is that proposal?
Well, Chair Johnson and Representative Hannah, there was a bill passed some years back to allow 200 video poker machines at Portland Meadows, but the bill was vetoed. And so there is some modification to the traditional lottery rules with regard to the racetrack, because unlike most retailers, which I believe can currently have 5 machines, the racetrack can have 10. Now, there is rules allowing what's known as instant racing, which is a parimutuel game. It's based on the outcome of a horse race, but it looks like a video poker machine or a slot machine, and those are legal in the state of Oregon. But the video poker and the Oregon lottery tie-in, that was vetoed some years back and never, I believe, brought up again.
Follow-up.
Thank you. I'll be brief. I'm just wondering, the company that's then putting the capital into the new or the upgrade of the facility, will it include the style of game you mentioned that has the game that looks like lottery or looks like online betting, but it's on horse?
Chair Johnson and Representative Hannah, yes. Instant racing is a part of the 7-figure investment that Portland Meadows is currently in the works of moving forward with.
Any other questions for Mr. Tolman? Senator George.
I think that's a bill we need to run by the governor. New governor. You know, I'd forgotten it was vetoed because I thought it was in place too and wondered why nothing had happened. Okay, thanks. I know the mini casino thing is a little heartburn, but.
Okay, that concludes your presentation.
That concludes the testimony. Chair Johnson, if you would like me to go over the performance measures or anything with regard to the revenue or policy packages, I can do that as well.
We'll get to that in just a second. I just wanted to finish this part of the presentation, and I'm also going to ask the staff to see if anyone signed up for public testimony. Senator Monroe.
Yeah, I believe when you were here before, you testified that you were very pleased with the Toronto-based Canadian company that now owns Portland Meadows, and now your talk about the major investment that they're making. I think we need to recognize that not all good things initiate in the United States of America, but there's a lot of good things that come from Canada. And I'm not just saying that because I was born there.
Chair Johnson and Senator Monroe, yes, Magna has made a significant investment, and quite frankly, with some of the environmental issues that they faced, some companies would have walked away. They are a big company. They own a number of racetracks, and I guess in some regards it's a bit like Walmart. You know, people will take shots because you're a big company. But having said that, they have made investments when it needed to be done and done things to keep Portland Meadows open that others may have walked away from, and then we would really be hurting without Portland Meadows.
Madam Chair.
Follow-up, Senator Monroe.
Yeah, I probably should declare a possible conflict of interest because my daughter-in-law works for Portland Meadows as a chief financial officer.
Thank you. We'll note that for the record. I was expecting you to have a stand and we'd sing a few bars of O Canada. Thank you. I'm going to go ahead and ask you to withdraw, and we have John McCauley signed up for public testimony, and then we'll come back and look at your performance measures.
Thanks.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is John McCauley. I'm representing the Oregon Fairs Association. We're here to support the budget of the Racing Commission. You heard about the small summer race meets. Four of those five actually occur on county fairgrounds and are very important to those fairs and those facilities. We support the efforts that have been made by the Racing Commission over the years to put money into those small race meets. They have been critical to those communities. Those race meets draw people from outside the county, bring economic activity to those areas that wouldn't otherwise exist, and we think it's very important for those opportunities to continue. So those are my comments very briefly. We do support this budget and support the efforts of the commission to help those small race meets.
Thank you very much. Any questions of Mr. McCauley? Thank you very much.
Thank
for
you,
joining
Chair.
Us. There's no one else on the sign-up sheet, and so I'm going to invite Mr. Tolman to come back and go through your performance measures.
Madam Chair, if I might just for a second set the stage a little bit. That these performance measures, we have worked, LFO staff's worked with the agency in the months prior to the session to rework some of the measures, to drop some, to add some new ones. So what you see here is the culmination of some work we've been working with the former director and members of the commission. I believe the commission has looked at some of these new measures, particularly the measure on the number of race days. And so I just wanted to set the stage a little bit.
Thank you. That was very helpful. Mr. Tolman, you want to go through your performance measures with us?
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Members of the committee, I would be happy to do so. We'll start with Measure 1, Animal Safety. I would like to comment, as you can see, it mentions number of horses destroyed per 1,000 starters. Now, that is something that we want to keep the number at a minimum, but I wanted to make the committee aware of just what can happen with a racehorse and why sometimes fatalities occur, because I think it's important everyone have an understanding. I've been involved in racing for 22 years. I love horses. I've owned a racehorse, and I certainly want everything possible to be done for the safety of the animal. But I wanted to touch on the very nature of the animal themselves. Horses weigh 1,000-plus pounds. In a race, they're running at 40 miles an hour. If you or I are running and we put our foot down wrong, we can get a severely sprained ankle. Two Portland Trail Blazers, for those of you who follow the Blazers this season, have suffered serious ankle sprains where they were unable to play for several games as a result. Well, when a horse does it, they have over 1,000 pounds at 40 miles an hour, landing on one foot at a time. In essence, I believe that increases the pressure, the pound pressure, to around 10 or 12,000 pounds, possibly more, landing on that leg. If they put that foot down wrong, they can suffer a catastrophic injury. It doesn't happen often, but it can happen. And to be clear, it happens to horses out in the field, too. It's not unique to racing. It's an unfortunate aspect of the fact that you have a 1,000-pound animal that loves to run, that just like us, they can take a bad step. Our goal in this performance measure is to keep that number as it has been for several years at a fraction of a percent of all of the starters that run at Portland Meadows that would suffer that kind of injury. And again, I'll say it's a fraction of 1% of all of the horses running. So we're not talking about a daily occurrence.
I think all of us were pulling for poor old Barbaro as that unfolded. Let me ask you about this performance measure. This is just at Portland Meadows?
Well, actually, I believe it incurs all of the racing in Oregon. The large majority of it, though, the vast majority of it, would be at Portland Meadow.
But what I think is implicit in this performance measure is the fact that you have to have tracks that minimize the possibility that an animal could have a problem. You have to have equipment like starting gates where there's a lot of tension at the beginning of the race with the horses and the jockeys. Make sure that that equipment is functioning. Could you speak to that a little bit in terms of some of your money being invested back into the local meet sites with respect to animal safety?
Well, the two-thirds that we talked about earlier, that's available not only for purses, but it is available for improvement. It has gone to things like barns. It's gone to things like tractors, which could be used for track maintenance. There's nothing that would prevent it, I suppose, from being used for a starting gate for the most modern and safest equipment that's reasonable to purchase. One thing in terms of safety for animals, too, I'd like to share that Portland Meadows does have a track committee that meets on a regular basis and reports to the commission monthly at our commission meetings. Most recently, they talked about adding some more sand. Portland Meadows is largely a sand-based track. Go figure with our wet weather that sand holds up better than dirt. It packs down, and it's a better surface than mud for the horses to run on. It's a safer surface. But periodically, you do need to add more sand to improve the cushion on the racetrack, and that's in the works for them as well. So it is something that we do try to keep tabs on, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay, number two. Whoops, the question, Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How do you get an actual of a tenth? I mean, in the measurement, how do you get an actual of a tenth of an animal? I'm not quite clear on that.
Well, I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Representative Hanna. The fraction, the 1.5 per thousand, is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, you show that as your actual, and I'm saying actually,
we have more than 1,000 starters over the course of the meet. There's more than 1,000 starts, so it's based on a whole horse, not on a half of a horse, but over the course of the number of starters, when it's averaged out, it comes out to 1.5.
So you're not okay.
That responsive representative.
I think it is. It's a per thousand, not actual horses.
Yes. Right.
Okay. Any other questions on one? Number two, Mr. Tolman.
The license turnaround time. Well, the Oregon Racing Commission has recently made a significant investment in a new licensing system purchased from the state of Washington. Over the years, we've used a couple of different systems. They weren't necessarily user-friendly, and it could be time-consuming going back and forth between records. Now we have a much nicer system. It helps the turnaround time. We want to get people licensed in a timely manner. We also, and it's another standard, I believe, that has been talked about with regard to being able to complete suitable background investigations. But the basic process is somebody comes in, they fill out a form, they turn it in, we get them a license, our investigators do follow-up and ensure that the licensee is eligible to be licensed or desirable to be licensed in the state.
Any questions? Okay, number three.
Race days. Well, we would certainly love to see more race days. What we have now, we want to make sure that we maintain. And so that's really the goal, is let's make sure that we have as much live racing in the state of Oregon as we possibly can, and that we don't see folks cutting back on their number of race days.
Mr. Tolman, how can your commission be responsible for local decisions that are made by local county commissioners and local fair boards, and yet you bear the brunt of the responsibility for those?
Well, that is true, that it is something that in some ways is out of our control. Thus far, historically, with the summer meets, they stay relatively the same in terms of length. We did lose some days at Grants Pass this year. It looks like we're going to go from 16 days to 9. So, yes, indeed, that could already impact our performance measure. I think the intent was we regulate racing and we want to encourage our licensees to run as many days as possible. But you are correct that there are circumstances that are beyond our control.
Why then did you select this as, I mean, it's clearly a desirable goal, but it's completely out of your ability to control.
I understand, and I wondered that myself as I reviewed it serving in an interim capacity, why this particular measure was chosen. Though it is noble, it is something that is somewhat out of our control in terms of total days that a racetrack runs.
One might, and I'm just making this up on the spot, but perhaps a more accurate measure of your advocacy as a commission might be the investment in advertising or something that causes people to turn out for races, because I think if it's clearly a hot ticket and people want to go, that you could prolong racing days that way. So, colleagues, I might commend for your consideration when we get ready to go to work session on this budget whether or not this is an accurate measure of the performance of the Racing Commission when county commissioners are largely, and race and fair boards are largely making the decisions that affect whether or not you perform. Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. No, along that line of comment, the number of days raced and the number of races are certainly an outcome. Perhaps it's the management of the agency that is the input that that creates that outcome.
I think that's a good suggestion. Colleagues, I might just commend your consideration for this performance measure when we come back into work session. Okay. Senator Monroe.
Yeah, I agree with Senator Whitsitt that although there are things that can happen that are out of his control completely, If the Racing Commission is doing the job to the best of their ability, then hopefully it will have some long-range impact on the number of racing days.
No, I have a question.
Senator Church.
Do you have authority to actually participate in promotion? In other words, what I'm thinking about is we now have a group that's promoting tourism in Oregon. Mm-hmm. Do we have something we can slip in, a packet going out giving the race days in Oregon? Low-budget stuff like that could be done.
Chair Johnson, Senator George, we do have some discretion with the two-thirds funds in terms of what it is put towards. Typically, it comes as requests from either the fair meets or industry organizations. But that is certainly something that if one of those organizations wanted to request the funds be directed towards something like that, we could consider that, certainly.
The reason I said that was that I had forgotten how much fun it was to be at Tillamook Fair. Okay.
And one, you want to say that again loudly?
I had forgotten how much fun it was to be at the Tillamook Fair. Part of that was the racing. Okay. I didn't bet any money because I'm a poor farmer, so, you know, I can't. But anyway, the question is that I've met a lot of people at Tillamook. And the first time I ran was in that district, who came there from out of state for not only the wonder of the fair, which, that's a great fair, but was also the wonder of having that kind of small town, historic looking horse race. So, that's what prompted that question relative to, would you guys, let me just ask you right here on the record, would you guys check with the folks at Tourism Promotion and ask about including something in there? You might want to think about seeing events in Oregon.
Chair Johnson, Senator George, if that's something that we can do, we certainly would consider that. And I would echo your sentiments that Tillamook's a great place to go to the races. Actually, all of the summer fairs are great experiences, and I've enjoyed them all immensely.
Spoken like a true diplomat. Okay, number four, Mr. Tillman.
Number four, we have total purse supplements at summer fair meets, total industry disbursements from the development fund. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm reading the proposed deletions. Let's go to customer service.
Right. I'm sorry. I was doing them 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, and you were doing the numbers. I confused you. So we're at customer service.
The customer service measures, as you can see from your sheet, it is something new. We have started to do it. I have seen some of the feedback. I don't have any preliminary numbers at this point. It's been a relatively small number of customer forms that have been turned in at this point in time, but I do believe it's a good measure. It reflects the public's opinion of the commission and the job we're doing, and as in anything, public perception matters.
How do you decide that public? Because it seems to me that you serve a variety of interests. You serve racegoers who are there to have a good time. You serve your thoroughbred community, the technical people that are around the racetrack, the veterinarians. Who do you consider your public?
Well, as it states as far as strategy, there's a link to the questionnaire on the ORC website. It would include the public at large, licensees, other agencies and jurisdictions that may be involved in some manner with horse racing. So it is very broad and open-ended, but again, the intent is to see how we rate, what people think of us, and what we can do to make our image better.
Is it just a happenstance that somebody would find that? Because I could see somebody who'd had a thoroughly dreadful experience seeking out your website to complain. I've gone to Tillamook and had a thoroughly wonderful experience. Mm-hmm. How do I find you to say how great it was?
Right, and I guess that was the motive behind putting it on the website, Chair Johnson, was to not only make it available to those folks who actually come into the licensing office, for example, at Portland Meadows, but to anyone who would care to do so. Now, you are correct, though, that when you put something on the web, you can get hit by just somebody who happens to have had a terrible experience, and maybe 2 years down the road, we may look at this performance measure and say maybe 75% positive wasn't such a great goal. Maybe it's not realistic. But
Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In your strategy, you say you will use a questionnaire that as part of your website. Then you want to say public licensees and other agencies and jurisdictions will be surveyed. Mm-hmm. How will you do that, or have you started doing that?
I believe that it's, again, based on whether they actually choose to fill out the form when they get their license in terms of licensees, or the public if they either fill one out at the track or do so online. I don't think that it's something that we're going beyond those measures to get the feedback.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, you want to discuss your deletions and the rationale?
I will gladly do so. The proposed deletions would be the number of disciplinary rulings per 1,000 races. I believe that was probably a bit of an arbitrary number in terms of really measuring performance. There are a number of things that can impact how many of those we would have, how many disciplinary rulings we can have. It can vary widely. Some things that can trigger disciplinary rulings can be something as simple as a new feed supplement comes around the track. It makes horses test positive for something. It takes us a while to figure it out, and in the meantime, there's been disciplinary actions against those who use that product. So it can vary widely, and that's primarily why we feel that particular measure should be removed.
Okay. Next one.
Would be the total dollar amount of simulcast handle to $1,000 of live track handle, Madam Chair. The industry has gone through numerous changes in terms of where the total dollars come from in wagering. While we love live racing, and live racing is very important to us, the total dollars generated by races brought in as simulcast from out of state dwarfs the live handle numbers. So, and as you see more tracks participating, or in the case of Portland Meadows, for example, Portland Meadows offering more wagering opportunities for their customers, the amount of money that's actually wagered on the live races may go down, even if handle goes up, because there's so many different wagering opportunities for their customers at the track. So that makes that measure again, something that's not a very consistent means to say how things are going.
Okay.
And measure, the last one would be total purse supplements at summer fair meets to total industry disbursements from the development funds. Now, just one moment. It is an outdated measure. The Racing Development Fund was initially intended to supplement the summer fair race meets in the form of those purse supplements, as it says in the budget. But now the Racing Development Fund is being used for other things. And so, again, this measure is just simply outdated as a performance measure for our agency.
Okay. All right. Any other comments or questions for Mr. Tolman? Will you remind us, Mr. Siebert, when the work session is?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, work session's Thursday. I would also note that we will be adding a performance measurement on the best practices for boards and commissions. This is a commission that would fall under that purview, so there will be a measure added on the best practices for boards and commissions that was developed by LFO and BAM over the interim and signed off on by the Joint Legislative Audit Committee.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions or comments? No one else has come into the room, so I don't think we have any additional public testimony. So in the absence of any comments from the committee, I am going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 5538. Any comments for the good of the committee? Then we stand adjourned without objection.
Thank you, Madam Chair.